Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Mike Lanana and Jim Schoenert. I'm John Manuel. As usual, our podcast is brought to you by Louisville Slugger. Visit them at Slugger Nation, both on Twitter and Instagram. Very excited for their sponsorship during the year. And very excited about the weather that we had here in North Carolina this weekend. A lot of good weather around the country. A lot of college baseball games actually being played. No, I don't see a whole lot of... no series were banged. It's in April, and thank goodness. We had an entire series played. Only a few series that were not, that were interrupted.
I think the A&M Kentucky one was the only one that really got kind of
Yeah. I think that was about it. So, and as a result, we've got a lot of college baseball to talk about. Not a lot of movement at the top of our rankings, but we did have quite a bit at the back of the rankings and some new blood in the college baseball universe. Jim Schoenert was some on the at Jim Schoenert BA tweeting, and you've been our research guy for the rankings and the polls for the last, what, 4 years now, Jim?
Yeah, I think you've been doing these. Keeping track of that stuff, yeah.
So we have Iowa ranked for the first time since 1990. We have Missouri State ranked for the first time since Brad Ziegler and Sean Markham played there, their 2003 College World Series team, back when they were Southwest Missouri State. So it's really the first time Missouri State has been ranked with that current name.
It's true.
And first time for the Missouri Tigers since 2009, way back in their Big 12 days. You could barely remember them. But Missouri, one of the big stories, we teased it last week, guys, that this was a big week for the Show Me State in college baseball. I don't think we linked those two together, but now that they're in the rankings together with Missouri at number 20, Missouri State at 24, we're going to start off talking Show Me State college baseball. And so it's a little bit surprising, I guess, that both are ranked. Missouri State wins a series against Dallas Baptist. But let's talk about that Missouri Tigers, that SEC matchup, because the SEC is so compelling as a league and so top-heavy. And Missouri really separated itself as being one of those top schools this weekend by winning that series against the Florida Gators. And, Jim, I know you've talked to both coaches, but I'm going to start off with Mike. Mike, your former intern mate here at Baseball America, Ian Frazier, interned with you here that same summer in 2013, and he's finishing up at Mizzou this semester, and he's covered the Tigers the last 2 years, and he tweeted at us, what are our thoughts on the SEC? Is it a down year in overall quality, or just more competitive than ever? Which one do you think explains the Tigers being 8-4 and the fact there are only four SEC teams with above 500 records in the league?
Right. Well, it's hard to pick one of those two. I mean, you look at the top of the SEC, I think it's as strong as ever. But I think more than anything, Missouri exposed some weaknesses on South Carolina and Florida these past couple of weeks. I think they're the real holes in that team. I mean, South Carolina, we dropped them. All the way out. And then Florida, we dropped them from 4-10. They have question marks. So I think it shows that, some of those perennial powers in the SEC are struggling a little bit this year.
Yeah, the Gators especially, Jim, as you noted in the Top 25 Tracker, not much good for them other than Logan Shore this week.
And, it was not.
And I've talked to a couple guys over the week with the scouting, spoke with our draft update, and then was talking to some college coaches as well over the weekend. You look at Florida, and Harrison Bader's had a really nice year, but now you're in SEC play. J.J. Schwartz, a little bit tougher for a freshman to thrive in that four hole. And yeah, he has five home runs, but he's mostly been, according to the guys I've talked to, more of a mistake hitter. Josh Tobias having a great senior season, probably going to be a single-digit draft pick because of those. That's where you value those seniors, and he can maybe play infield, kind of a Johnny Ash type to throw him back in John Manuel all-time faves. Jim Schoenert knowingly laughs about Johnny Ash, one of my all-time favorite players. But really, this team offensively, outside of Harrison Bader and Tobias, Jim, they haven't been very consistent in league play. And their weekend rotation outside of Shore, really, even including him, haven't been consistent on the weekends.
Yeah, they have not. They've kind of been looking for answers. I mean, they sent A.J. Puck to the bullpen for a weekend, and he actually pitched well. I think it was against Alabama last week. But they bring him back in the rotation, and Missouri hammers him. And Mizzou is not a high-flying offensive team. They're a pitching and defense team. That's how they win. So for him to give up 9 runs on Saturday is pretty disappointing. And, I mean, then on Sunday they just... I mean, really, 2 days in a row, they just did not hit that whole. They really didn't hit. I mean, they didn't hit that much on Friday. They did all their scoring in two innings in the game they won on Friday, and then they basically did nothing offensively the rest of the week. You know, they lose that game to Florida State on Tuesday, the kind of their midweek rivalry game. And I mean, it's, you just look at what Florida's done in conference play. I mean, they're 6-6. They haven't really done anything that loud, really, other than, you know, you and I talked about this this morning before our meeting, was other than they won that series against Miami in week two. But other than that, I mean, it's been pretty blah.
It hasn't been dominant for a team that has dominant kind of talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tobias is hitting .380 in the league. He's kind of carrying things for them. But Schwartz and Bader are hitting – Bader's hitting .207 in the league. Schwartz is hitting .202 in SEC games. So those are their – that's 13 of their home runs as a team. That's where their power is coming from. And then Richie Martin has been okay in the league, but it's a .669 OPS in the league. It's only 12 games. I mean, the small sample size things do apply. When I look at them from afar, I'm looking at where's the offense going to come from. I'm thinking Bader. I'm thinking Martin. Early in the year, it was certainly Schwartz and then Tobias. And in conference games, really, Tobias has been the only real consistent guy. And then Dalton Guthrie and Buddy Reed have, you know, done fairly well. But this is a team that's got too many crucial guys who aren't really producing in the lineup. And it's been a fairly mediocre lineup thus far in league play. And, you know, I guess that's a little bit more of a veteran lineup. I know Schwartz and Guthrie are freshmen, but they're impact freshmen. It's a very I don't really know necessarily, you know, who they're counting on, who they can count on outside of Logan Shore in the weekend rotation yet. And I know everyone's allowed to have a bad start. Shore had a bad start or two, but AJ Puck's given up 7 home runs this year. I mean, and Dane Dunning was good for 4 innings, then kind of let it go. Do you guys expect the Gators to get back into this? They're not going to win the East in the SEC. I mean, that's not going to happen.
4 games behind Vandy now.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty much, I mean, now.
So they've got South Carolina at home. They're at Mississippi State. They've got Kentucky at Georgia. They got Vanderbilt on the road. They got Auburn. I mean, all the schedules in the SEC are tough, but is this a team that can, is that a schedule, Jim, that can set up for them to be a top 8 national seed, or is that ship starting to sail? Last week we kind of talked about it. They wanted to be a top 8 national seed. They kind of needed to win this Missouri series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you think they can still do that.
Well, I mean, they have the talent too. But I mean, we haven't really seen anything to indicate that they're to bank on them doing that. I mean, they've kind of, like we talked about, they weren't able to sweep Tennessee at home. I mean, that's right. The kind of series you need to sweep. They, you know, they lose a game to Alabama, who's struggled. They lose a series to Ole Miss, who's kind of struggled. I mean, you know, maybe if they can sweep South Carolina, which seems doable,
right?
Then maybe they kind of get back in that race. But, I mean, right now they're just kind of muddling along, and they keep just taking 2 out of 3, lose 2 out of 3 on the road here and there. I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, they have not hit the ball in conference play, and they're just, it's not going to get any easier. And there aren't any series they can't win other than, you know, the trip to Vandy. You wouldn't expect them to win there. But other than that, I mean, they can do it, but I would not bet on it at this point.
I think there's reason for skepticism. There's also reason for skepticism for South Carolina, Mike. This is the other team that we talked about, the other kind of desperate series when we looked at the SEC coming into the weekend. And the Missouri-Florida series was the biggest one, and we discussed that one a little bit. Then South Carolina-Mississippi State, two teams that were really struggling in league play. And, boy, things did not go well for the Gamecocks, especially the first two games of that series. And this is, again, a club that, you know, is 6-6 in the league. They're 3-6 on the road overall in the season. And now Will Crow on Thursday night gets really just pounded. So he was like one of the few constants for this team. I know they've gotten some nice innings out of Brandon Murray. The freshman from Indiana has been kind of a godsend for them out of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And that Kyle Martin's been consistent. What else can this team kind of count on? And what's your prognosis for South Carolina going forward?
It's kind of head-scratching to see the season that they've had with the pieces that they have on that roster. I mean, you look at them in the preseason and you think that they're going to be a contender there, you know, near the top of that division. And the problem for them the last couple of weeks has been their hitting. Offensively, they've struggled. And, you know, like you said, Will Crow had been a constant for them. And so it was very strange to see Mississippi State crush him like they did. And even Weinkoop gave up 14 hits. I mean,
right.
He was hit around a little
bit. Wasn't fooling anybody.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a big series for Mississippi State. You know, tip your hats to them. But it is a bit strange to see South Carolina struggle as much as they are. One positive for them is Max Schrock is getting his bat going. He had a big 5-for-6 day. His average is up to 287. It was around the low 200s for a while there.
And they moved him to the outfield, right? They moved him to left field for one game at least?
They've moved him back and forth between second base and left field. The infield alignment has changed constantly throughout this year.
Yeah.
They've tried Jordan Gore a bit at shortstop. They played Marcus Mooney a bit there as well.
They definitely, and they've had reason to experiment. I mean, Chad Holbrook has not had a hot stretch, guys, where, this lineup is working for us. So I can definitely see why he's been fiddling with things, whether it's Wynkoop in the bullpen one weekend or whatever. They're still fifth in the league in league games in ERA. So I'm more confident in their pitching than I am in their bats. Is that? Do you guys agree? You agree on that one, Jim? Are you more confident in the offense for them?
I think on talent, I'd be more confident in the pitching. I mean, like you said with Show, everyone's allowed to have a bad start here and there. But I mean, if both Crow and Wynkoop getting knocked around is pretty, that's pretty discouraging. If those two guys are going to win any kind of funk, I mean, that team's not going to go anywhere,
right,
in my opinion. So
no, I think you're
those
right.
Those two guys have to figure it out.
It still amazes me that they haven't pitched Destino, but the one game all year, and now I don't think he played this weekend, did he? I mean, offensively, he's been so poor in SEC play.
Right.
So you're just taking your number two power guy out of your lineup right there. Outside of Kyle Martin, you know, Destino just he has 3 walks all year. He can be pitched to. These are changes they're having to make on the fly, adjustments they're having to make that are challenging adjustments to make. So there are good reasons for why this team is struggling. Right. The teams that aren't struggling, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, LSU, our top 3 teams, all of them swept this weekend.
Held serve.
Yeah, I mean, they all held serve. They all swept. Any of those teams, which of those teams stood out for either of you, Jim? I mean, whose weekend stood out the most for you out of those top 3 teams?
I'll say LSU. I mean, getting the sweep of Alabama on the road.
Went on the road. That's the thing I should have mentioned.
I mean, LSU was kind of the team we looked at that, along with Florida, they kind of had to pick up the pace a little bit to stay in the national seed, you know, race. And, they did that going on the road and sweeping Alabama. So they had to win a couple of marathon games there. Like, they've kind of been normal for them lately, but they're able to get that done. And, I guess it is kind of concerning that, you know, Godfrey and Lang both kind of struggled a little bit. You kind of wonder if those freshmen might have hit a wall. But
is there a plan B for Godfrey, guys, that you guys know of? I kind of wonder what that would be, because Jake Godfrey, the last couple of it's been, you know, been a little bit of, to quote the old Will Kimmy line from long ago here, beep beep, it's been a little bit of backing up. He is not. This was not a guy who finished last year strong in high school. He's physical, so you would imagine that he would have the legs and the body for a durable season. But the SEC is hard for any freshman to go in there and from day one maintain it. He seems like he's backing up a little bit. The last couple of starts have been poor.
Right. I could see them maybe going to another freshman, Doug Norman, mm-hmm. Who's pitched well for them this year. He's 3 starts, 10 appearances overall, 2.42. He's a guy I know, not in the same level as Lang and Godfrey coming in as a freshman, but he's a guy that they were high on coming in as well. So if Godfrey continues to struggle, you know, maybe they make that switch. Maybe they give Norman a shot in that weekend group. But just looking now, I see Jake Latz was another freshman that they had coming in, and he hasn't pitched at all for them this year.
I figure what the injury was specifically for him coming into the year, but that's the other guy that you would imagine, if he does get healthy, what could be a factor. I would imagine they'd want to do anything with Stallings. He's been pretty good in their bullpen role.
Right.
Obviously, the whole bullpen threw well this weekend. So,
right.
A long game, lengthy game. I know there was kind of a back and forth, mm-hmm. Jim, on that Thursday game with Alabama that kept on going. But this is a team where, obviously, the reason we ranked them as highly as we did coming into the year was the offense. Mm. And it's been a good, not great offense, but definitely that's still their strength. Just talking to a couple of scouts about Alex Bregman, just to touch on that again, just the fact that Bregman's making such consistent hard contact, the .629 slugging with only the 6 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that stands out is, you know, my man crush on Kyle Holder, at USD, Kyle Holder only one error. Alex Bregman has one error all year.
Right.
So, I mean, you still find scouts who are still thinking he's a second baseman, not a shortstop, but one error all year is one error all year. That doesn't project forward, but for LSU's chances of winning a college national championship, the fact they're fielding 977 as a team, that's a great sign for this club. So this is another box that they check, and they really had the one stumble against Kentucky. And otherwise, guys, all three of these teams, and that's the thing, that's the reason the other teams are in front of them, they haven't stumbled in weekend series. Vanderbilt did at Dodgertown. Texas A&M wasn't even ranked at the start of the year. They're number two now.
Right.
But the fact that those teams have been so consistent, I just think is really, really impressive.
Another thing with Alex Bregman, too, is he has 17 steals this year already. And
that's surprising.
I was talking to him before the season, and he said with USA Baseball this summer, they just let him run wild. They said, you know, we want you to try some things out on the base paths. And he really took that to heart. And, you know, he said, you know, I think I'm going to steal some more bases this year coming into the year. And so far he's done that, 17 for 21.
I'm not sure how much that projects either, but that, again, right, projects for them. This is a team, as you guys talked about and wrote about preseason, they wanted to get more aggressive on the base paths, and they have. It's translated, which is impressive. Anything about these losing teams in this series? I think we've talked about the 500-ish teams in the SEC, Georgia, Kentucky, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Alabama. Are we worried about any of these teams, Jim, as you're doing these 64-team projections? Do you have any worries at all about those teams which of those teams should be most worried about making regionals? Feels like Alabama's kind of in trouble.
Yeah, they've kind of, I mean, their RPI is still very high, so that'll keep them in the conversation. But yeah, they haven't really done anything especially loud. I mean, I'm trying to think of what their best series is. I mean, they've been competitive with other teams. They haven't actually,
all their best series are losing to teams.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of not getting swept. But, yeah, I mean, Georgia, you kind of would like to not get swept at home after they're playing Vanderbilt, but, you know, that's kind of they kind of had some momentum going after winning that South Carolina series, and they kind of give it back there. So they've been swept twice home now by Missouri and Alabama, so that's not what you want.
From an RPI standpoint, what's the worried ones are Arkansas and South Carolina and Georgia.
Yeah.
Like, those are the three teams that are in the bottom. I mean, South Carolina's in the 50s, Arkansas and South Carolina and Georgia are towards
some
the back
of 100.
Just have
to make sure they finish over 500.
Right.
To be to start with.
Right. No, that's a good point.
Some of these, like, what is it?
Ole Miss
is in Arkansas. All those teams are just kind of hovering around 500.
Yeah, Ole Miss
overall. So you have to be over 500 to be eligible, if I recall correctly.
No, you're right. I mean, and Ole Miss especially, they're at 500 in the league, they're 500 overall, under 500 in the league. Just lost the home series of Tennessee, which is a huge series win for the Vols. And you're just looking at their schedule at Vanderbilt next, then at Auburn. They still have to go to Missouri. And then they finish up at home, but it's three of their last four series at home. But Alabama, Mississippi State, and then Texas A&M. So really, like, at home against Mississippi State and Alabama are about the only series that you would say that Ole Miss is going to be favored in going forward. That doesn't augur well for that above 500
bid. No, it does not.
I've said this in the office a couple times. I think Mike Bianco deserves so much credit. I used to bang on him on this show a lot on the podcast because they didn't schedule heavily. I always thought they underperformed. They changed things after that 2013 regional, Jim, where that 2013 season where saw them in the regional in Raleigh.
They had been like, 22-1 or something like that.
And then they fell apart down the stretch. And to his credit, baseball's all about adjustment. And Mike Bianco adjusted. And Cliff Godwin adjusted, his assistant coach at the time, now at East Carolina. And Carl Lafferty, that staff adjusted. They adjusted the schedule. They got better. They started recruiting more junior college players, as Vince wrote in our preseason story about Chipola. They made some adjustments to the program, and it got them to Omaha last year. Broke that drought. They deserve all the credit in the world. And this has been a tougher schedule for them. But it's kind of set them up for a little bit tougher road to making regionals. So it's really surprising to see that out of the SEC, that you've got some teams that are really struggling just to get to 500. The ACC is the same way. Top-heavy league, guys. And I guess one of the debate points in our top 25 field, I should say, was how high to move Louisville. And we just didn't – I still don't know, Mike, how good Louisville really is. They've got one more game tonight against UVA, trying to sweep that series. I almost feel like I know more about Virginia and have more doubts about Virginia, which is barely in the rankings, still at 22, that I know, that I feel like I know about Louisville, where they've found new heroes, it seems like, every week.
Right.
This team, and especially, you know, McKay and now Corey Ray just going off.
Right.
Continuously, it seems like he's really stepped up as the offensive leader of this team.
Well, yeah, I mean, Coach Dan McDonald before the season said Corey Ray needs to be that guy because they really don't have a lot of power in that lineup. It's really
right.
It's a lineup built to run, built to use speed.
And it's been a power franchise. Is that a franchise? Or it's been a program, whether it was Chris Dominguez or Adam Duvall. They got a lot of pro guys who hit a lot of home runs. I just ran into Jeff Gardner this weekend or last weekend in spring training. That's a guy, first of all, recognized me from pretty far away with the Louisville floppy hat that Coach McDonald gave us last year. Sent in a Louisville care package. I have to admit, I wear the floppy hat a lot. I can't find my Canadian persnicketiness floppy hat.
Hmm.
And so the Louisville floppy hat's always in the car, and it has been for a year. It's come in handy. And Jeff Gardner recognized the Louisville logo from very far away in that spring training and wanted to know where on earth I got that Louisville floppy hat. Coach McDonald's known for the floppy hats and his very sensitive. He's very takes great care with his skin. This is a little-known Dan McDonald facts, but this team is very known for the power, and they really haven't had it this year, like you said, outside of Corey Ray. And he's power and speed. I mean, this guy's been pretty dynamic, Michael.
Right. Yeah, he has been. And Sutton Whiting at the top of their lineup has been excellent for them, too, coming back from a down year last year when he was hit in the face by a pitch in the very first game and just couldn't get into a rhythm after that. He's hitting .378 this year, .503 on base. You know, that's exactly what you want at the top of your lineup, and he's a guy who can steal some bases as well, so he's been setting the table for him. Nick Solak is having a decent sophomore year after a good freshman year as well, and, you know, you look at Brendan McKay, and he's really been, I think, a game changer for them, you know, both being a five-hole hitter in that lineup and then solidifying that weekend rotation, because Anthony Kidston struggled for a while. And now he's kind of solidified that Saturday spot. And then even Josh Rogers, his last couple of starts, has been improving. And you know,
Kidston's not getting back in the rotation.
No,
it doesn't look like anytime soon because the guys in front of him are all pitching well.
Right. And I think that was a big key for them was getting that weekend rotation squared away because, I mean, the first couple of weekends, I mean, even Kyle Funkhauser struggled. And the walks are still too high with him. He's still walking 3-4 batters a game.
You can even go rent as two. You can go, the walks are too damn high.
Too damn high, yeah.
I think he's earned that.
Yeah.
The draft class, the trying to compare the top college pitchers in this year's draft class to past classes, top first-round picks. That's one of the ways the college pitchers come up short this year is the walk rates of the top college pitchers are all higher than you usually get for a first-round draft pick. We'll have more on that coming up at BaseballAmerica.com and in the magazine in coming weeks. But, I mean, Brendan McKay, this guy might be the freshman of the year, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, hitting and pitching, and whichever way they need it, he seems to do it. You've seen a lot of UVA this year, Mike. I mean, how worried are you about this team now? I mean, like, it seems like they really need this weekend rotation to kind of carry the load, and they haven't been able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, I know we've talked about it a lot, but losing McCarthy, and then now they made it official last week, losing John Laprise for the season with hip surgery. You know, offensively, you know, they're not the strongest they're going to be. They're going to need that weekend rotation to lead the charge, and, you know, they're going to need Nathan Kirby to outduel Kyle Funkhauser, not give a grand slam to Corey Ray. And they're going to need, you know, Connor Jones to live up to, you know, his stuff. I mean, he has the stuff to be a frontline guy, but, you know,
he hasn't done it.
He hasn't done it the last couple of starts. So it's, you know, if you give up more than five runs, you know, it's going to be difficult for this Virginia lineup to come back into a game. You know, it's a very young lineup.
Another thing that stands out to me is that they made four errors in that game.
Right.
The Saturday in the opener of that series. It's just hasn't been a vintage Virginia team in any way this year.
And they're you know, they're desperate for players, honestly. They're so shorthanded. They started with a 29-man roster, 14 freshmen, and now with these guys going down, I mean, they've recruited from their club team. They're
amazing.
They've made changes all the way around. I mean, they're moving Ernie Clement from the infield to the outfield. Kevin Doherty, a reliever, a left-handed reliever for them, they moved him to the outfield and, you know, started him. in games. So they've had to do so much. It's been all hands on deck with them. So it's, you know, which probably explains all the errors, is because you're playing guys out of position in positions that they don't have a lot of familiarity with. So it's really a big jigsaw puzzle. So it
has been. And I think health is a big part of this. I mean, you mentioned it for Virginia, and then you compare it to Louisville. I mean, there's a reason why Louisville leads the ACC in ERA by almost a run in league games. Jimmer, NC State is second. Would you have imagined that the Wolfpack are second?
We need to call us Rodon.
Exactly. and you would imagine, if you're NC State, that if you walk four guys the first two games against Florida State and you give up four runs, you probably like your chances a lot. And yet they lost both those games. Once again, Florida State just figures out ways to win. I think between the three of us, we saw three of the biggest home run hitters in the country this weekend. You saw Chris Shaw and Will Craig.
And the boss, Mondu.
And they Mondu, who's right there with DJ Stewart. Those four guys together have 40 home runs.
Yeah.
11 for each for Shaw and Craig, 9 apiece for Stewart and Mondu. Jimmer, what was your take on the Seminoles? It was our first time seeing Florida State in person. I guess in a way, I almost was more encouraged by Florida State's future than I was this year's team, although this year's team certainly grinded its way through to a series victory. But you look at the freshman over there between who started the second game?
Drew Carlton.
Drew Carlton, yeah. Who was outstanding Friday night. And then the other freshman, Walls at shortstop and Busby at third. That's a very impressive contribution the Seminoles are getting from their freshman class.
Exactly. I mean, Carlton was brilliant on the Friday night in the
tremendous
second
dancer.
Game of that series.
I mean, obviously known for his dancing skills coming in.
And then you got
Fresh
the
Prince of Bel-Air reference. Yeah. That's it.
Wow. We needed
a Periscope for that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Up Periscope. But, and you had Darren Miller get the winning hit in that game on Thursday night against Tommy DeJunis, who's been great for the Wolfpack. And, I mean, yeah, for Florida State, I mean, they've kind of had some... Coming into the year, we kind of wondered about that lineup, you know, who was going to help out DJ. They've figured it out like they pretty much always do. I mean, they've had this Quincy Neportes come along.
Yeah.
He's been a big help. San Soans had a really good year. So they've had guys step up. And Dan DeLacalle hit a home run the other day. So,
yeah. He has five home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
So they're piecing it. They always find a way.
They're ninth in the ACC in hitting, but they lead the league in runs scored in league games. So once again, I mean, part of that is they've played some at home, they've played a decent schedule this part, but the walks, the approach, it's the approach that Florida State has that that impresses me the most. The other ACC kind of desperation series we talked about were not ranked teams, guys. North Carolina at Clemson, and once again, the bullpen does not come through for North Carolina, and Clemson does come through on the mound. Tigers, I don't know if they saved their season that way, but at what point, guys, do we start worrying about whether North Carolina even makes regionals? I mean,
right, and they have a tough midweek slate this week. They're playing Coastal Carolina tomorrow night. They're playing Liberty on Wednesday, so they're going to be tested.
They are. I mean, I'm just looking at the ACC teams from an RPI standpoint. I don't know how Wake Forest, NC State, they're in the 70s. Clemson's down there. And Boston College is a higher RPI than all those teams. Duke's down there after getting swept by Miami. They're just this league, I think, is in more trouble in terms of getting maybe just 5, 6, 7 regional teams than the SEC is, guys. Because after Georgia Tech lost its series this weekend, I mean, who is the fourth? I mean, Wake Forest is the fourth place team in this league,
exactly.
Really? With their pitching, doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of depth there, Mike. I mean, they.
Right.
Will Craig is a big deal. He's a big part of their bullpen if they can find enough.
He's been starting for him.
Yeah.
He's made three starts. He started on Sunday, and he's they're building him up slowly. He had an 88 pitch limit on Sunday, and he threw decently well through the first few innings. I mean, he was touching 93. Showing a good curveball, getting lots of swings and misses on it. The control isn't really there for him. The polish isn't there.
Right.
You know, being a two-way guy, he doesn't really have a third pitch that he can go to. He uses a two-seamer sometimes, but the changeup wasn't there for him on Sunday. But, I mean, he's a legit two-way guy. Outside of Matt Pirro, their Friday starter, who, I mean, walks are a huge issue for him. I mean, he has 31 in 42 innings, which isn't great. obviously.
His name should be Wilder, like NC State's number one starter, who was outstanding Thursday, Corey Wilder. But
yeah, so Wake's pitching. I mean, they have a reliever, Parker Dunshee, who's had a nice year for them. But otherwise, it's a team 5.65 ERA. Playing in that ballpark in Winston-Salem, the way the wind was blowing out this weekend, I mean, if you get some loft on a ball, it's going to go over the fence at right field. It's going to happen. And, you know, Nate Mondu homered in every game, and Will Craig hit one out actually against the wind to left field. It was a monster shot.
8 of his 11 home runs in league games, which is very impressive for him.
He's been on base every single game but one this year. Be a hit or a walk. He's had a tremendous year.
It's hard to not come to the conclusion that he has been the most important player in the league, especially now that he's pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, but does one of those other teams, Jim, step forward, stand out, I guess, most to you? I mean, they have the league has the number 2 and 3 RPI teams in Miami and Florida State. But out of the rest of that group of a North Carolina, Wake Forest, and NC State, did any of those teams stick out to you as or Georgia Tech as a team that got a chance to host a regional, or the rest of the league really outside that top three is going to be on the road, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't see anyone else hosting. I wrote about this last week in the Field of 64. I think Wake should. I know Wake's RPI is not pretty right now; it's in 76. But I would expect they'll make it because their schedule is pretty manageable. They should be able to finish. It would have been helped to sweep Boston College instead of just win 2 out of 3. But I mean, they're 8-7. The only really hard series they have left is at Louisville. I think every other series they have left is one or series they can win. So if you get to 500 or better in the ACC, you'll get in. Your RPI will be fine.
Georgia Tech, I guess, is the team that we haven't talked as much about. But it really feels like this is a team that, you know, they haven't figured things really out on the mound. I mean, Devin Stanton came into the year as like their ace, and his ERA is up around 8. But offensively, it's a really good team. Matt Gonzalez is starting to get going offensively for them. They've got some thump in Murray and obviously Kel Johnson. This feels like this is the team that, especially since they've gone on the road the last 2 weekends and obviously swept by Louisville, but kind of held their own and win the series.
Without Kel Johnson in that.
Right.
Been without Kel Johnson, too.
Right, so. Yeah, he's been banged up. It feels like they've survived the toughest part of their schedule. I mean, they had three out of their first 5 ACC series on the road. And they've been, you know, not 100% healthy through it. Do you guys see the Yellow Jackets as the team that, I guess they're the breakout potential team from the ACC?
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, they've got, we've seen they can really put a lot of runs on the board, especially when Johnson gets back. And they've got some pieces on the mound. I mean, Brandon Gold's had some good starts. If he can get him going, get some consistency. Jonathan King at the top of rotation has, you know, can win some games for you. So if they... You know, I think it's probably too late for them to be a host, but if they can get on a roll and they've got some manageable series, they get Virginia at home this week, if they can, obviously that's not easy, but I mean, the way Virginia's going, you think that's a series they probably should be favored in. Then they get BC, Clemson at home, Pittsburgh at home. I mean, other than they finish the season at Miami, but other than that, every series between now and then is one they can win.
I have supreme faith in the Virginia coaching staff. They've earned that confidence, but I'm just looking at their schedule, guys. They got to go to Georgia Tech. They still got to finish this Louisville series tonight.
Right.
They got to go to Georgia Tech, home to Miami, but come to Raleigh for NC State, home to Duke at North Carolina. That is not.
That's a tough slate.
An easy schedule.
It's going to make or break them.
I think they're in real danger of missing regionals. That would be stunning for a team that was ranked as high as they were in the preseason. That would be pretty shocking. But I think it's in the realm of possibility. It's the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. Guys, another team I touched on earlier, we started off talking about the Show Me State. I got sidetracked and talked ACC baseball. I want to talk a little about the Pac-12 in a minute, but I do want to talk about Missouri State and that Missouri Valley Conference series with Dallas Baptist and Missouri State. And I think that had to be the best series of the weekend in terms of two evenly matched teams, conference series, and the closeness of the games. I mean, I guess the fact that the LSU swept that Alabama series kind of made that not the best series, even though there were a lot of close games in that one. This one was a 2 out of 3 series win for Missouri State. And this is a team that has a pretty impressive resume, guys. That's one of the reasons that we brought them into the rankings. Jim, what's the key to this team, this Missouri State team? And is this a team that you could see, especially now they won this series against the against Dallas Baptist, is this a team that's a regional host potentially? I mean, I know they have the facilities to do it. They have the RPI for it. Do you think they have the talent to keep it up and to earn that spot?
It's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be tough for a Valley team to host a regional, for them to keep the RPI high enough to do that. But, I mean, they can do it. I mean, obviously they do have a leg up on DBU now, but, I mean, that race is not over. There's a long way to go there.
Right. But, they don't have a lot of distance.
I mean, I had DBU as a host in the last projection I did, so it's I could definitely see one of those teams getting in there. But, I mean, obviously they've got a lot – for Missouri State, I mean, they've got a lot of talent on the mound. I mean, they've – John Harris, their ace, who missed the start earlier in the year, but he's been back. He's been pitching well. They've got Matt Hall has been kind of taking that job on Fridays. He's been pitching well, and that, you know, he was really good. I think he was good this past week. Harris was great against Dallas Baptist, which is an outstanding offensive team, and they really, you know, they ended up losing the next innings on Sunday, but they really, or Saturday, I guess it was. But I mean, they pretty much held DBU down for pretty much that whole series, and so they kind of gotten Tate Matheny going. He's kind of their star offensive guy, the guy most people know. But I mean, they've been a productive offense. They're averaging 7 runs a game. They're, you know, top 50 in the country in average and in scoring and slugging. I mean, they've got 19 home runs as a group. So, I mean, they can hit. I mean, it's a balanced, good, you know, they can score in different ways. They can bunt and run. I mean, there's a lot of ways they can beat you.
And I think the other thing that jumped out to me is Dallas Baptist in a series where they have a chance to get swept on the road. That was a very gritty performance for them on Sunday. They gave up a lead late, but came back and won it, and obviously in extra innings. And Daniel Salters comes through with his first home run of the year. This is a guy who, I think, coming into the season, he would have been like one of my picks to click as far as a college position player who could hit his way into the top 3 rounds. I really thought, and this was a feature idea that we talked about doing, because Daniel grew up, I believe it was in Africa. His parents are missionaries. There's a lot of meat to the story on the off-the-field side, but he just hasn't had a great year offensively. And for him to get that first home run of the year, that was a pretty big way to win that game for Dallas Baptist in a must-win kind of situation where obviously there's a lot of season left to play for them. But I just thought that to prevent the really good teams don't let themselves get swept. Mm-hmm. And they find a way to get that win, and Dallas Baptist found a way to do that. And that's one of the reasons why they're a very consistent regional team. But, you know, Salter's hitting .220 on the year, just hasn't had the kind of year offensively they thought he would have. It feels like that's kind of the story of their season, really, that offensively Dallas Baptist had a great year, even though, I mean, they had a great year, even though their offense hasn't been really that kind of the standout offense that we thought it would be. They've got Koch in the bullpen throwing 97 miles an hour, as Hudson Belinsky was telling us early in the year. The scouts in that area were really high on him. They've got pitching depth, and they've pitched very, very well. But offensively, it seems like a team that they've got some pretty gaudy numbers. But when they ran into the best pitching staff they'd seen all year, they kind of were held down and really held in check generally by Missouri State. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on the Patriots at all.
No, I mean their reputation is that they're a pretty heavy hitting offensive group historically. I mean, they did, if memory serves, they won a series at San Diego in week 2, I believe, which obviously that looks pretty. The series looks a lot better right now. It was kind of part of San Diego's slow start, but I mean, I would expect they'll bounce back. I mean, this is their first real blip. I mean, that's kind of an older team, and they're used to winning games. I don't think they're going to go off the rails at all.
You have to nitpick with a team that's 27-5.
Exactly.
You know, I remember looking in the weekend preview going into it, just seeing the UMass Lowell on their schedule. But they didn't play those games.
Got wiped out. That's probably going to help them. Yeah.
But I think Texas Southern and Monmouth, some of those teams they beat up on early. Mm-hmm. I wondered how real those offensive numbers were, and I still think that they, like you said, they've always had offensive performances there, but just looking at the fact that Missouri State, with the way they held them down, I wonder about that going forward. But like you said, this is a veteran club. Probably shouldn't panic about Dallas Baptist offense anytime soon.
They'll have a nice test against TCU this week, though.
Yeah.
And that'll be a good one.
TCU, I just was looking at their numbers coming into this, too, and we have the Horned Frogs at number 4. I guess it makes sense that Riley Farrell's only thrown 14 innings all year, guys, because when are they going to need him? Their pitchers have been so good all year. And Mitchell Travers is another one of these great stories. But this team just keeps on. They go on the road and win the series against Texas Tech this weekend. It really does kind of seem like the Big 12. We had those top four teams coming in, but Oklahoma State and TCU are kind of separating themselves in that league, guys. And I guess TCU is really the team that separated itself the most.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, we always expect TCU to pitch, and they've been able to. Alex Young has kind of taken that Friday role, and they kind of had to scramble their rotation a while ago when their schedule got all screwed up. But you know, I think he's kind of feels like he's kind of I'll pitch Preston Morrison a little bit, at least lately. I mean, Morrison right. lost to Texas Tech this week, and you know, Young's been really good. I mean, they've got so many arms. I mean, they were kind of like you know, we talked about them with Vanderbilt, that they've got so many arms, they you know, never run out of options.
They don't ever seem to run out of options, and they're leading that league in pitching ERA by a wide margin. But Oklahoma State's actually second. And it feels like Oklahoma State has kind of figured this out as things have gone on. An impressive weekend, obviously, for the Cowboys this weekend, Jim. I mean, I don't know if anything stood out to either of you guys about the method in which Oklahoma State swept that series or just the fact that they did it. I mean, they were 7-2 in the league now and lead the league over TCU three series in.
Yeah, I think just their overall, what they've been doing in the last few weeks. I mean, they lose that series. They kind of muddled through the first few weeks. They lose the series to Arizona State. They lose series at home to Illinois. So either of those are bad, but still, I mean, we had them in the top 10, so they lose like two of their first four series or whatever it was. So we kind of bounced them from the rankings, but then they've been red hot ever since. I mean, they beat TCU in Fort Worth. That was pretty loud. Right. Now they've just kept it rolling.
And you wrote about Michael Freeman last weekend and three strikes.
It's been a big fine for them on Sundays.
And they were able to leave him in the weekend rotation on that Sunday spot. That's just daunting for Texas. You're on the road. You lost an 18-inning game on Friday or on Thursday, the opener. And then you know, you've lost the first two games of the series, and then you're running into the 6'8 left-hander who no one's beaten all year. I mean, you did the feature on Ben Johnson last week. Mike, you talked to him and talked to some of the guys at Texas. Mm-hmm. Feels like they just haven't hit their stride yet, at least from my vantage point. Do you have any worries about the Longhorns at this point? Or kind of where do you think this team is and trying to get back on the beam? Because this weekend sweep does not help them.
Yeah, talking to Ben Johnson, actually, I mean, his take on it was, you know, they've been out of sync as far as weekends where they pitch well, they don't hit well. Weekends right. where they hit well, they don't pitch well. And that's, I mean, you look at the numbers, and, you know, I think that bears fruit. I mean, Casey Clemens has gradually gotten a little better, but Chad Hollingsworth hasn't really picked up from where he left right. off last year in the postseason. He struggled for them, and I mean Parker French has been great, but you know there's not a lot of depth in that weekend rotation.
It really the pitching staff is kind of what I thought would be what you expect to carry Texas year in and year out, and it feels like it's been good but not great this year, Jim. And I don't know, I'm surprised that the Longhorns they've lost seven straight games here. I'm just surprised that this is a team. I thought they had the talent to avoid some of those long hit streaks. And mm-hmm. and one of the things that came up with my shortstop story that I did for the draft, the college shortstops, is that CJ Hinojosa has not played his way into that top group. And I know that we had him a little bit higher, I think, than probably the scouting consensus was, just based on the scouts don't love the body with Hinojosa, and he doesn't look the way that you expect a shortstop to look. I think we had him up that high because of the intangibles and that leadership that he kind of showed last year, but this is just not a guy having a great year. I mean, you don't want to put on one guy, but this is a junior shortstop who was your best player in Omaha last year, and he hasn't been able to really follow up that season. So they always kind of struggle a little bit offensively.
Just kind of the nature of where they play, but yeah.
Right, but he's also hitting .205 this year. So when you're looking at whether it's you're looking at the guys who were the top returnees from last year's Omaha team, a lot of those guys have not been able to follow that up. Johnson stepped forward and had this big season, and there hasn't been someone else there to step forward on offensively. I'm starting to – I guess you have to kind of start to wonder when Texas starts to worry. Their RPI is at 84. You know, 17 and 15 overall, but RPI is at 84. You kind of wonder when they're in some trouble too for looking at it at large-wise. We should wrap up by talking about our Pac-12 teams, guys, especially the top of the rankings. And USC, I mean – again, kind of like Texas A&M, didn't start the year ranked. We did project them as a regional team. But they just kind of obviously made their name with the big Dodger Town sweep. Mm-hmm. And now, Mike, I mean, now they're, you know, keep on winning, and they really haven't slowed down. Right. I guess there's been a bump here or there, but USC sweeps this weekend in league play on the road at Arizona. They do it pitching-wise. They do it in a slugfest. Arizona had been, you know, not necessarily tested, but I thought it was a really good test for USC, and they passed. I mean, 25-6. It's hard to nitpick on the Trojans at this point.
No, they're one of the most complete teams out there, I think, right now. I mean, they have balance in the lineup. The weekend rotation has been steady for them all year. There really hasn't been that many changes there. They've had Mark Huberman's been great for them out of the bullpen, a left-hander who's got good stuff. Kyle Davis has been solid in the closing role for them, and you know the lineup is it's been very good. I mean, Bobby Stahel's batting .430 for them at this point.
That's a deep lineup.
Yeah, it's very deep.
When you saw them in person, did it strike you that way at the time, like that this was that they had some staying power offensively, or does it kind of surprise you a little bit that they've been this good offensively?
No, when I saw them, I came away very impressed. I mean, they were just aggressive. They didn't let up, and right. they're a team that can beat you in a lot of different ways. You know, they can hit the long ball, or they can bunt. They can play a little small ball. They can run a little bit. You know, they can do a little bit of everything, and it's a very athletic club. And you know, I just think it's a veteran club too. It's a veteran club that has a level of confidence coming off of the end of last year, where they just missed a regional, and it's just rolled into this year. And then I think having the weekend that they had in the Dodgertown Classic, talking to some of those guys, you know, talking to Dante Flores, a senior on that team, after that series, he was just so pumped and so elated. And it's like, this is what we've been waiting for with USC, and it's just, you know, I think they do have staying power. I think they're going to keep rolling.
And the thing about the last three weekends is that the last three weekends were on the road for them.
Yeah.
And they've won all three of those series at Cal Poly out of the league, and then at UW, and then at U of A, if I can use the local vernacular. Mm-hmm. So now it sets up with a top 10 showdown. Number 6, USC. Number 7, UCLA. This weekend, the Bruins just keep on rolling too, guys. I mean, I don't know if there's an easy favorite there, but to beat Oregon State, which had been playing very well. Yeah, I know we haven't ranked the Beavers yet this year, but it's not because Oregon State's been bad. There just hasn't been that one signature weekend where they've been able to break in. Certainly would have been ranked if they'd won that series this weekend against UCLA, but going back to that shortstops piece, I did get some pushback from scouts. I'm like, hey, I think you left Kevin Kramer out. You know, John Savage definitely, I think, would put Kevin Kramer up in any listing of college baseball shortstops, no matter how good the other ones are.
Yeah.
He loves his guy. And this team has just, again, the outside the Dodger Town where they went 0-3, right?
Right, they did.
Outside of that weekend, they've lost three games the whole rest of the season. And it's a much more, we talked about them earlier, it's a much more offensive club than it's been. And I just talking to another scout, over again, about the college pitching. The only thing James Caprillion doesn't do is throw over 90 miles an hour consistently. He's at 89, 90 mile an hour range, but it's a pretty good, you know, number one star, a guy to have, a tremendous senior in Grant Watson. This team just seems like, I don't know if you have you've seen them both, Mike. I don't know if you have a favorite in that Trojans-Bruins series coming up this weekend. I would imagine that's fodder for weekend preview, but who would you favor in that series? And what's your, what would you point to as the number one reason why UCLA's had the kind of year they've had?
Yeah, it's a tough series to pick. I mean, they're pretty evenly matched for the most part. You know, looking at UCLA's stats now, they have cooled a little bit offensively after such a hot start that they got off to. But Kevin Kramer has been a difference maker coming back from his injury. You know, I'm not sure here. You know, it's tough to decide on this one. I think UCLA has a bit more pitching depth at their disposal. I mean, David Berg has been outstanding in conference play. He hasn't given up a run yet in 16 innings. Struck out 22 guys as their closer, a submariner, and Grant Watson has that experience. And Caprillion's, even though he got a tough luck loss this weekend, he's been great for them. And it seems like they're going to Griffin Canning now on Sundays. He's been excellent as a freshman. I know they're very high on him. You know, Savage said that he would have been a weekend starter if they weren't, you know, so deep, which says a lot. You know, he's been starting on midweek for them, so.
They've got their seven guys, it feels like. They know what they're going to do in the bullpen.
It's very regimented. I mean, they have, you know, they have Jake Bird in there and they have Matt Trask in there, and Hunter Verant's kind of struggled for them. He was a guy that they were leaning on a little early on, but Grant Dyer's been great out of the bullpen.
Right.
So they know what they're doing. They have a game plan on the mound, and obviously with Savage, I mean, as far as how he manages a pitching right. staff, he knows what he's doing.
Feels like Dyer and Forbes are their bridge guys to Berg, and yeah. we know David Berg has pitched 20 of their 29 games. And
so has Dyer, for that matter.
Right, yeah. and we expect them both to pitch, especially Berg, to pitch well all year, as long as is possible and as long as is necessary. The thing that stand, they seem so similar to TCU. Both those teams stand out to me for, they just don't walk anybody. TCU right. with 54 walks on the year as a staff, and UCLA with 65. Both those teams are very stolid on the mound. The rest of the Pac-12, though, guys, we've got ASU, so we have three Pac-12 teams now in the top 10, mm-hmm. with the Sun Devils moving up to number 9. It feels like that next team, though, is probably, what, Oregon State? Is that the next team in this league? Because Oregon has just completely fallen apart. Swept at home. Mm-hmm. Swept at home. Oh, Cal, that's right. Swept at home by the Spartans, though, which will transition us into our Big Ten, our weekly Big Ten discussion.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, I'm not sure who's the next team we could possibly host. Could you see? I mean, we talked about Cal, Jim, but
yeah,
lost this weekend to Wazoo now.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably just – I think it's really those four are really the only candidates. I mean, and Cal's got to – kind of got to – get back on track now. I mean, their RPI is not even all that. Their RPI is 70. I mean, Oregon State has a better RPI, but
Oregon State at Oregon. If Oregon loses that series, I think the Ducks are
they're 2-7
toast.
In conference. I mean, geez,
their that RPI is 117 now.
That is wheels come off very quickly. That is amazing with that.
I mean, you just look at all the rankings, not just ours, had them in the top 10 just 4 weeks ago. And this team has just completely fallen apart. Is there an obvious reason for this? It just feels like offense, on the mound,
yeah.
everything.
I mean, they lose Jack Carricker. That hasn't helped them. But it feels like more. I mean, I know Cole Irvin's had a couple rough starts last time I looked. But, I think it sounds like the main thing is they're just not hitting.
I'm just looking at their schedule. I mean, they've lost games to 7-26 Portland. 15. You know, they put Michigan State over the 500 themselves. That kind of brings us. It really does kind of bring us to the Big Ten, guys. I mean, I think we're all impressed with this league, and we've talked about them a lot this year. We brought Iowa into the rankings, as we said, for the first time since 1990. Illinois, we jacked Illinois up to 17 now as the Illini continue to impress, sweeping Northwestern this weekend, which that's not necessarily in and of itself, but they also won a game midweek against Missouri. They finished off a series win against Michigan State last weekend. Northwestern, we should throw in that this is the announced retirement of the last season for Coach Paul Stevens, who's been there, I think, 31 years. And good guy, but never a program that's really done a whole lot. So I'm very interested long-term to see if anyone – I'll be interested to see how coaches perceive that job. Is that a really good job? Is Northwestern willing to pay some money for that job? It feels like Northwestern has money because of the Big Ten has money. And they went out and spent some money basketball-wise to hire Chris Collins when they've never made the NCAA tournament in basketball.
Have they ever in baseball?
I don't believe they've ever made it in baseball. Not in the modern era, anyway. And I'm just trying to look. You know, Paul Stevens is a well below 500 record as a coach, as a head coach, historically. So I'm not trying to bang on the guy. But I never thought that was like a sleeping giant kind of program. It's never been thought of that way, I don't think. But this is a team that hasn't had a winning record since, I'm having to go back to 2000. Last winning record for Northwestern. That's one of the reasons why the Big Ten never gets four or five bids. Even when the league has a good year, the bottom of the Big Ten tends to drag it down. Is that going to happen again this year, Jim? Or Purdue and Northwestern and some of these teams that have really rough RPIs going to drag the Big Ten down to preclude some of these other teams from getting
that mix too? Yeah, I mean, he's kind of looking at their numbers right now. You got five teams that are really kind of the dregs there with Rutgers, Northwestern, Penn State, Purdue, and Minnesota. I mean, in terms of RPIs anyway, they're all outside the outside the top 150, or well, Minnesota's 149. But anyway, and then you got all the rest of the teams, like, all in the top 60. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I think the next worst is Michigan's number 57. Everyone else is higher than that. I mean, so I mean, I think they'll hold up enough. I think it'll kind of help you if you play those bad teams on the road. That's kind of what you need to hope for. But I think I had them five teams getting in the last projection I did. I probably wouldn't change that. It might change who the teams are. We'll see if Michigan had a good series win the other week against Maryland. I didn't see what they did this week.
No, they beat Indiana. They beat Indiana 2 out of 3.
We had Michigan as a team in the preseason, so they might. They're still just 4-5 in the league, but they could get back in that mix.
I'll tell you the couple things about Michigan. I talked to somebody about Michigan this weekend. First is that Travis Mazes, one of their preseason All-American team, one of our preseason All-Americans. He's battled muscle pull on and off all year, so he's back healthy in the lineup. They moved him from short to third. He hit a lot this weekend, really was a key guy. And really, they've been carried by their two All-Americans, Mazes and Jacob Cronenworth. And they've moved Cronenworth from a relief role to a starting role. And you talk to scouts about him, and when those guys got voted All-Americans, I honestly did not know much about either one of those guys. So back in February, I made a couple emails or texts and calls about trying to just find out a little bit more about those guys. And I checked back in this weekend. They both were huge this weekend, and Cronenworth's now moving to the weekend rotation. So even though the pro guys see him as a future reliever, he's up to 94, even as a starter, got a good split, breaking stuff's a little shy, so he's probably going to be a fastball split guy in pro ball. But he plays second base when he doesn't pitch. He's their leadoff hitter. He draws a lot of walks. Mazes is in their three hole. Those two guys are really good college baseball players, kind of carrying the load for Michigan. There's a third hitter in that lineup who's the DH, who I'm blanking on right now. I don't remember if I have M. Go Blue live on my stats or not. I'll cheat and look them up. But this is a team that the trend lines for them are good. Not just that they've won the last 2 weekends, Jim, that they're starting to figure it out. Eric Bakich started to figure out his weekend rotation. It's Carmen Benedetti who's hitting .339 for them and providing some of the pop there. So good name. Member of the Italian tribe with you, Mike. So so they're starting to figure things out. And now that Mazes is healthy, that's just a big piece back in their lineup that had been missing. So, and then Ohio State's their team. I don't know. We've talked about them. I don't know terribly much about Ohio
under
State.
They're under the radar, yeah.
They are under the radar, but they have the highest RPI in the league outside of Nebraska and Maryland. They're number three. So Maryland's other team, Jim, we should talk about. You've been on the Terps all year, and they kind of rewarded your patience by sweeping Nebraska this weekend.
Yeah, that was a real hashtag statement win.
It was. You can use that. I'll allow it, counselor.
I hope I don't get some blowback from my NC State followers on that one, but for using it for Maryland. But
that's right.
That was a huge. I mean, they hadn't really done anything terribly wrong the first week. So they sent anything all that loud. I mean, they lost a series to UNC Wilmington, which is not. I mean, Wilmington's a good team, so that's not something you can really fault them for. They lost a series to Michigan, who's another talented team. They just hadn't really had a chance to do anything loud, really. I mean, their schedule just hadn't. Those had been their two best series, and they'd lost them both, so that's kind of why they were out of the rankings. But, they got Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska was red hot coming into that series, and the Terps kind of had to come from behind on Sunday to finish that sweep. They get two great starts in the Saturday doubleheader with Mike Schworn and blanked on the other starter's name. But, I mean, you kind of wondered about their pitching after Mike Schworn was kind of the issue. They kind of had to kind of been experimenting. They tried Willie Rios in there. He kind of struggled. I think Jake Drossner has been a little up and down. So they've kind of had to search for some answers. But
they put Robinson in the bullpen, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which
and
was
he was good yesterday. Yeah, I caught a little bit at the end of that game yesterday. He was striking guys out. He was jacked up, but they're getting out of some jams. I mean, it was
that seemed to be the issue is that they put Robinson in the bullpen, mm-hmm. and the scouts I talked to were. And scouts are always there to second-guess college coaches. That's just kind of the nature of the beast. But a lot of the scouts I talked to just didn't understand why he was in their bullpen, and then they weren't getting enough starting pitching, Jim, mm-hmm. to get to Robinson so that Alex Robinson could affect the game. I mean, he hasn't given up an earned run all year, but he's only got the two saves because they throw him on Sunday when games were decided already. So it was a real challenge, I think, for them. I think they're still figuring out John Sheff and company, who are our starters going to be so that we can use Alex Robinson as this twice in a weekend guy instead of once in a weekend. That was kind of the idea. And I think it's made it harder for scouts to see him, but I think it also, until this weekend, they weren't getting leads and where they could get him those high leverage innings in the bullpen.
And I think the other thing kind of stands out for me about Maryland is watching them play the long ball.
Right, right.
I mean, they have 28 home runs as a team. I think that last year they had like 10 or 12, something
yeah,
like that. I mean,
absolutely.
They had 3 home runs yesterday. They hit another. They had one on that big one in the doubleheader on Saturday. I mean, they were. I mean, last year they were a very athletic team, but they were a bunt and steal.
Correct.
And get. I think they led the country in hit by pitches. They were very much a small ball.
It was a finesse offense.
Score one run at a time team. I mean, you look up and see Brandon Lau has 7 home runs. I mean, always liked him as a really smart hitter, but he's found some. I'm sure the new balls have helped, but I mean, that guy's tapped into some power. Kevin Martyr, their catcher, has 4. Nick Sieri, the big first baseman, has got 3. Jose Quas, the third baseman, who's pretty physical guy. He's not really hitting for average, but he's got 5 home runs. I mean, that's a big shift for them.
It really is. No, it really is.
I mean, when we saw them, coming through here last couple of years, their end of their ACC tenure, they were, if they got a guy on first to start an inning, it was going to be a bunt. It was just automatic.
It was as automatic. Them bunting was as automatic as Virginia throwing 4 pickoffs to first if a guy went on first base.
So to see them beating somebody with home runs, I mean, this is a new world for the Terps.
It is a new world. A couple Twitter questions to take us out, Michael. Direct the first one to you from a longtime listener and frequent caller, Tucker Blankenship.
Mm-hmm.
They all could get in, but if they had to pick one team from the old North State and from this ACC trio, I should say, of North Carolina State, Clemson, North Carolina to make regionals. If you could only pick one, which would you pick? Would it be the winner of this weekend's North Carolina NC State series?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good way to go. I mean, I think of those teams, I still feel like UNC has the most talent. They've just underachieved so far this year.
I think that's fair.
So, I think the winner of this weekend series, I think you could definitely say would be a favorite there out of that group.
And we have Alex Margulies. I think I pronounced his name right. I hope I did. I pronounce it like Juliana Margulies does her name because I think he spells it the same way. But Alex done play-by-play in the minor leagues, and does it for the University of Nevada. He's wondering where our evaluation of Nevada is at this time and why Nevada hasn't been ranked. And guys, we did talk about ranking a lot of teams. We talked about
Nevada's been on the radar pretty much every week for a while.
We talked about South Carolina staying in the rankings. We talked about keeping Houston. We talked about ranking Nevada. I think there might have been one other team we talked about. We dropped Texas Tech. There was some turnover. We haven't even talked about bringing in Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
But guys, what was the case with Nevada? What was the case, I guess, kind of against Nevada?
Case 4 is just they've won a lot of games. I mean, the case against is their strength of schedule has been pretty bad. I mean,
222.
They haven't. I think what did we say their best series win was Fresno or something like that. I mean, it's not
probably Fresno.
Yeah. So I mean, that's their issue is they haven't really beaten anybody that loud. I mean, they won a midweek game at Texas Tech in like the second week of the season. That's probably their single best win. But
San Diego State was the other team that we discussed in the rankings, and they play in 2 weeks in San Diego.
Yeah, the winner of that series could well get in. There's an opportunity.
That's where I was headed. It's not these things all happen in a vacuum, obviously, Mike. But that seems like that's the opportunity for either of those teams to kind of break in the rankings. And what stands out about for you about Florida Atlantic? We've talked about them being in the rankings for a while. What caused them to be finally in this week? Because, I mean, this is, again, a team that is 26-6. They've won a ton of games this year. This feels like a pretty complete team. I know the coaches I've talked to who've seen them, when you talk to coaches and scouts in the state of Florida about who the better teams are, Florida Atlantic keeps coming up. I think that it seems like they're pretty similar, really, to Florida, to UCF, which we dropped the Golden Knight. But it's a very offensive ball club.
Yeah, no, it is a very offensive ball club, and I think, I mean, they've been on our radar for a while. They
right.
do have some impressive wins this year. They beat Miami earlier in the year. They beat UCF, and they have put up some pretty high scores with that offense, a lot of double-digit games.
They kind of pounded Marshall this week. What was it, 25 runs, I think, against Marshall this weekend? So,
yeah.
And you and I are familiar with Brendan Sanger was the starting second baseman on that 2013 regional team in Chapel Hill, and he hit 5 holes, a freshman. Right. He's moved to the outfield. He's kind of been the leading hitter. And even that year, he showed you the approach, and he's got more walks than strikeouts. The whole team has more walks than strikeouts. That's kind of what jumps out to me about their team right. the most is it's a pretty deep lineup, some real experienced guys. Ricky Santiago's been in that infield for 3 years as a starter. Sanger's been a 3-year starter. I mean, I thought they would take a little bit of a step back on the mound this year because of what they lost from last year, but they really haven't.
Drew Jackson's been very good for them, 5-1, 1.64. Yeah, I mean, they have three weekend starters here that have respectable numbers that have pitched well for them, and they do have a lot of balance up and down that lineup. They're hitting .316 as a team. You know, and obviously they can score runs in bunches. So they're a potent team.
It's really, it feels like it's going to be a case of, when you're comparing them and UCF, like which of those teams during the year will develop enough pitching depth that if they don't win that first regional game, can either of those teams kind of bounce back and win a regional from a loser's bracket? Because you can see where a lot of the other big major conference teams, even if they don't use all their pitchers, they generally have the depth. They don't always go to those pitchers. They don't always trust those other pitchers, but they usually have other arms in that bullpen who are getting full rides. And that's just not necessarily as true at a school like FAU or UCF. That's how it feels, Jim. I don't know if you have a take on the Owls at all.
With the Owls, I was just going to say about UCF, I mean, getting Zach Rogers going the last couple weeks has been, that's a positive sign for them.
Yeah,
I mean,
for UCF, going
with Craig Finfrock at Saturday on Fridays. But,
right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, for FAU, I must say they do have, they've shown three pretty consistent starters. I mean, you kind of wonder about the, you know, they, I mean, they do have some identity in the bullpen with guys like, you know, John Sabell, if I'm saying his name right. He's got good numbers. Devin Carr has got good numbers. So they've got some options out there, and these guys look like they've shown they can miss some bats when they need to. So, I mean, I think if they do find themselves in a loser's bracket, I mean, they're probably going to win more 8-7 type games than they are win many games 2-1, 4-3.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule them out if that were to be in that situation.
And I like Drew Jackson. I remember him from his junior college days. Senior, good body. He's got pretty good stuff. If that's one of your rocks on a weekend, that's a good place to start. And they did just pound UCF when they played them midweek this past week. So there's some offensive ball clubs out there. That's why it was so weird, Jim, to see Florida State and NC State so low-scoring games. But I think between the three of us, we saw a lot of offense this weekend. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing we should wrap up with, was the hashtag inevitable. We wrote about it last week on the site. I mean, did the numbers line up with the anecdotal evidence that offense is up and that there are more home runs, Mike? Did it line up for you? Or
I think so. I mean, just this weekend alone, they're playing in a bandbox in Winston-Salem,
right.
But you know, a lot of long balls hit. I mean, every weekend, you know, it seems like you can expect a few homers, and you know, you just look at rosters and you look at players, and you know, a few guys in double digit homers already this year to this point. You know, some guys who've already doubled their home run totals from the year before. Even look at a guy like Chris Shaw. You know, he hit I think 6 home runs last year. He's up to 11 this year. So
yeah,
you know, I think it's paying off so far, and I know pitchers like the ball too. So I think it's a benefit to both sides of the game. And even though the runs per game aren't up dramatically, I mean, it is, you know, chicks dig the long ball.
I agree,
and I think we all kind of dig the long ball. So you know, it's been
that's my line. It's not just chicks who dig the long ball. I dig it too.
Yeah.
I like the long ball, and then more than that, I like the threat of the long ball.
I think that's what really matters. That's the real difference of it. You know, like, I don't know, we've talked about it a lot, but when we got to Omaha last year, there just wasn't even a threat. He didn't even have to... Hitting a home run wasn't even a thought that it might happen. So now it's... And there is... Now there is, that does exist. I mean, we'll see what happens when we get to Omaha this year. But, yeah, I feel like for me, certainly there have been more home runs. I think it has felt like anecdotally there have been more home runs. I think the other part of it is, you know, we've heard a few coaches talk about this, that there are more... Not just home runs, but there are more doubles and triples and balls carrying over guys' heads and stuff like that. I think that's been just as big a part of getting more offense going as just hitting a ball over the fence. I think you're getting more base hits, and you know, balls are getting through the infields faster. I think that's been a big part of it as well.
You just see more. You see outfielders have to turn and go back on balls much more often this year than I've noticed in past years. And I haven't been to as many games as you guys have, but it's definitely noticeable. And hopefully this might be the last time we talk about it, because we're in this offensive environment. It's lasted halfway through. It feels like offense should even go up as the weather warms up. And certainly the weather's got to warm up, because it can't get any colder than it's been the first 7 weeks of the season. But halfway home with the regular season, guys. Keep up the good work. Thank you to our listeners for all the questions. You can always send those to us at podcast@baseballamerica.com via email, tweet at us. He's at M. Lanana. He's at Jim Schroeder, BA. I'm at John Manuel, BA. And we'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.